Hello, Radioland. You are listening to 91.7 WHUS Stores. This is another episode of Darshiv. I'm your host, Graham Stinnett. And today we are airing an episode that I have compiled since the summer of 2022 relating to the Inner College, which was an experimental education project here at the University of Connecticut that ran roughly from the early 1970s until about 1974. There was a 50th anniversary gathering that happened in the summer of 2022, and I was grateful to have been invited to collect some interviews from folks who had very positive experiences with this sort of internal experimental education program and philosophy. So I'm going to turn it over to the interviews that I did with a handful of folks that I found to be particularly interesting, and we'll let them do the talking for the majority of the show today. Thanks for listening. So can you introduce yourself and tell me what years you were at UConn?
Yeah, hi. This is Ed Edelman. I was at UConn 1967 to 71.
And so you took a course through the Inner College. Can you describe that a little bit?
Yes. The course we took was in auto mechanics, and it was an independent study, three-credit class, independent study through the philosophy department. And it came about because I had had an experience where I spent money to get my car fixed, and it was worse than when I got it. So I found somebody who someone suggested, why don't you do a class? A friend of mine who was in the Inner College said, maybe you could do a class or something and learn how to do some of this stuff yourself, which I wanted to do anyhow. And I found a friend to teach. And his parents were, his home was not too far away. And we would go out there, a bunch of times and do the brakes one time, oil change the next, or some kind of tune-up or something like that. And through that experience, I gained confidence in handling these types of jobs on my own. And realize that, with the proper approach, you can do things like that. And since that time, I've become pretty independent about repairs, actually still not so much with cars, but with, home repairs and things like that. So I've spent quite a bit of time doing that type of thing.
And so the friend that you knew, he didn't have anything to do with the university. He wasn't a teacher.
No, he was a UConn student also. He was, I believe, in the engineering department. So he got credits for it, too. He got three credits as the teacher. I got three credits as the student. I don't recall that there were any other students in the class. It was a tutorial kind of situation. But the idea of, having a student design the information that they felt they needed at that time was kind of new, and I sort of latched onto that. I thought it was a good idea. And like I said, I had a number of friends who were pretty intimately involved with the Inner College in terms of organizing and managing, and these were some of the early days of it. So knowing that was sort of a possibility kind of helped make this whole thing happen.
Do you remember much pushback from any advisors about taking a course like this? Was there any difficulty trying to get it off the ground?
No, I don't think so. I think considering all of the stuff that was going on at campus, it was an independent study class. As long as the professor signed off on it, and I was in the history department, and I don't even think my advisor really knew what it was about. I was taking an independent study in philosophy. So that was that, yeah.
That's great. Thanks, yeah. Ed. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
My name is Reggie Beamer. I'm from Waterbury, and I was in the Inner College 70 until the end, I guess, until I graduated in 72. we went to California to do an evaluation by comparing other educational, innovative educational options at their schools. The old Third World College out in Oakland, California, Merritt College. It was just a great experience for a young guy like me to leave out of the inner city of Waterbury to be a part of something different. I lucked out. I got a degree in alternative education and political science, so I did both. And because of the many of the things that we were taught in the college, to respect each other, to respect each other's opinions, it helped me a lot when I got elected. I got elected as a state representative in 1987, I believe, and I served 20 years. And believe it or not, I'm probably the only black state legislator in any legislature that graduated from UConn. And part of that was what we learned in the college, respecting each other, respecting each other's ideas, even though we disagree, we respect it. And that's something that's missing in our political bodies today. But UniCollege taught me a lot.
That's fascinating. The element of the experimental side of the education, did you feel like that was an element of the activism maybe that was going on at that time? Did you feel like this was part of the movement in a way?
Yes, it was a part of the movement. It was a part of self-learning, questioning the status quo in terms of education, and probably never to be replicated again. Even though we may try with different projects and attempts to look at educational innovation, the status quo is going to be there. However, I believe there's enough room in order to have both. Just like I was blessed to have a regular degree and a degree in alternative education. So I believe there's enough room to grow and adapt and to help individuals who want to do individual studies.
Did you have the ability of doing sort of the independent study that InterCollege offered? Like, I know you said you taught, so was it like graduate students could do the teaching, or it had to be undergraduates working with faculty? Like, what was really the dynamic between who could do what?
The best thing about that is the fact that we didn't have to deal with the status quo. We didn't need a graduate assistant to teach community organizing. All we did is went out and did it. And then we obviously kept journals and we talked about it. And we would also utilize various textbooks. Many of them were counterculture textbooks, but they still were books in some way. It was a learning experience that is way apart of anything that I've ever been involved with. And I have taught college, and I have taught high school, college, and a lot of the things that we did, I would put into my lectures.
Cool. Thanks very much for chatting.
Thank you, and keep doing your hard work.
So can you introduce yourself for me, please, and kind of talk about your experience with the InterCollege?
Yes, certainly, yeah. This is Len Grimmerman. In 1968, I came to UConn, and I was teaching, and we were looking at the work of Paul Goodman, who was a fairly radical anarchist, and it was towards the end of the semester, and we discussing what would be something we could do. And it wasn't going terribly well. And a hand flew up toward the end, or at the back of the place we were in. And she said, you know, Paul Goodman says that we should secede and move away from where we are. And that seems to be something that sounds good and may have worked in 1400 or 1600. But why don't we secede and stay here? Secede within UConn. And it just broke the whole session. And it led us to the idea that we could remain within UConn, but not be told what to do or to form our own way of learning. And so that's where eventually, sometimes later, we became the Inner College. And people flocked to it. 60, 70, 80 students, a handful of faculty members that had been formed in the time when things got really hot, burning this thing, or they were trampling into glasses and breaking up and so forth. And this group was about five people, urged us to come, because one of them was in the same, was in the philosophy department along with me. He suggested, why don't you come and tell us what you want to do? And they actually helped, because they asked us, well, what you're doing as what you call the Inner College, has this been done elsewhere? And it turned out it was. There was someone in upstate, and someone in the New York area, and I was able to say these have happened. They were working. They seemed very well. And so that group, I guess, went to the next level of the academic personnel, and that was the Senate, and we presented this, and students went around trying to get faculty members who were liberal to come and for and so forth. At any rate, it all turned out okay. But there were resistance. Lots of not so liberal faculty members were upset and they only would give us 1 year, and we had to prove that we did something worthwhile in that first year, and I guess we did. And again, we had the option of attempting to get the Senate to give us even further things, but in the interim, we had made a proposal that was accepted by the NEH, and they gave us $100,000, and the university didn't mind accepting it, and it enabled us to continue on for a further about four or five years.
And so did you do any sort of class teaching yourself? I've spoken to a lot of people today who, you know, took sort of experimental education courses or the philosophy of education. Were those inner college classes, or did you also teach like the sort of independent study versions of the inner college offerings?
Yeah, so I think, as I recall, I was teaching within the inner college, but also teaching the ordinary kind of courses, telling them that they ought to really be doing something like the inner college. Some of them they did, and some of them they didn't. A lot of people said a lot of things like, the main thing was to bring the group together, to make sure that everybody had a chance to develop his or her own way of learning. And what was often not there was ways in which the students could do their own and join with others. And that happened occasionally, and for some people it happened almost all the time, but most of the time people just, and it was fine, but it wasn't really generating a ways in which you could work with other folks. And that was something that I wasn't thinking about, but it occurred to me when we finally stopped working. All in all, I think most of the people who worked in a college got something that the other students would not have. And it shows when we get together that that was what really changed at least some part of their life, made their life a little bit more focused and gave it more depth. But again, it was singular, and often, not always, I had a group that came here that they're still working together, 30 years of them now, and so forth. And the inner college probably was the reason why. But
any last thoughts about today, about the inner college?
Well, I think that the amount of work that was put together to bring people together, I was really happy to see that. And people are talking to each other, and it's really good to see. And if I had more energy and so on, I would want to see all of them talking to each other and moving into things that what can we do next, we'll see that happen a little bit slower than I'd like, but I think it will happen.
Great. Thanks for talking with me, Len.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
I'm Abby Gibber, Sevita, Belmont, and I was there from 70 to 74.
I followed in Abby's footsteps, Betsy Abrams. I think I was there 71, 72, maybe into 73.
I'm Elena Stone. Actually, when I was in the inner college, people knew me as Ellen, but I now use Elena. I started in the inner college in 72, and when I ended was a little mushy, but I graduated UConn in 75.
And I'm Marian Vitale. I had just one course through the Inner College, and that was in 73.
And I'm wondering, what kind of classes did you ladies take? Was there sort of overlap in your study? How did you go about getting those courses approved? Anybody have any interesting example?
It seemed like I knew that all of a sudden the world was open to me to take courses that I wasn't able to take in the standard way. So I took a pottery course, I took an arts and education course, I took a photography course. And then I was introduced to the social justice work with Len, and did a lot about social justice and starting the starting the tutoring programs at Willimantic. So a lot of courses in holistic education and designed a whole education psychology major, holistic we called it, but it was, you know, the doors were open to work with great professors.
I remember the opposite, that I stopped taking any classes at all. That there was nothing that I was learning in classes there that I could pay attention to. And so I think with Lynn's guidance, you know, working in Whale, the tutorial program, I worked in the public schools to see what was going on and why no one who was bilingual had ever graduated from those schools, you know, and that I had a bigger lens. I read some books, read Free School and Jonathan Kozol, but I don't remember taking a single class, which I was pleased about. I mean, I don't know how I ended up graduating.
Independent studies.
Yeah, and I wrote about what I did and what I was learning from it. That was the only way I was capable of learning at the time.
Well, I started out having courses disapproved because I was in the honors program, and I had signed up and registered and taken a class with Len Krimmerman. I think it was philosophy of education. I think I had just found it in the catalog and I was interested in it. And I was called to the director's office of the honors program, and who basically told me, you can take this course or you can be in the honors program. You cannot do both. And it kind of became a you can't fire me, I quit situation. And I ended up making the choice to be in the inner college instead. I did a lot of independent study. I was part of a lot of the alternative education work. I remember teaching a creative writing workshop in the Mansfield Public Schools with a couple other folks, Whitney Dahl and Jeff Walter. Was part of the work in Willimantic, and I had a really just wonderful, enriching relationship with a young girl. Her name was Rosa Hernandez, and got to know her whole family and did some tutoring and mentoring work there. But I also did a lot of writing, and I was definitely an aspiring writer. One of my main mentors was Jim Scully, and did a lot of poetry reading and writing and studying, and also some journalism. I edited the Inner Tooth, which was the magazine, a couple of issues. That was a lot of what I did. And I took some other classes around the edges as well, but those were kind of the main things.
This is Abby again. I had the same experience with, I didn't like the large classes at UConn, too big, so I went into the Honors College, and then I was given a choice, Honors College or Inner College, and I chose Inner College. I was not happy with the competitive nature of the Honors College. It was preventing free thought. Also, I was able to do a semester abroad and live in Mexico for 6 months because of the Inner College and become fluent.
Yeah, and then I lived in Mexico also. I wanted to become fluent in Spanish, having worked in Willimantic in the Puerto Rican community. It inspired me to learn Spanish. Yeah.
That was a part of also what I wanted to ask was the role in which, you know, the university in a way needs to have more of a outwardly facing, you know, outreach program to places like Willimantic, right on the doorstep of the campus. And it seemed like the Inner College had a real goal to, like, at least, you know, of course the program wasn't to put students in Willimantic, but it seemed like many folks were self-driven to go to Willimantic and kind of invest in that community a little bit through this program. Is that correct?
I would say definitely. Yeah. And I think that the Inner College gave us a channel for doing that. You know, as much as, you know, we might have been, or I'll speak for myself, I might have been interested in doing that, figuring out how to do it would have been, I think, pretty difficult, and kind of getting the legitimacy in a community organization or whatever. So the fact that Len was making these connections, Len and other folks as well, in the Willimantic community, it really, it opened the door, I think, for a lot of people.
These are some ways you can do it. These are some things to think about. This is a group that you can work with. We had hours of meetings in my dorm room of all sorts of people coming in and crowded in and sitting there and all sorts of things. And so a lot of my college years were spent understanding that I could take an action that could have deep impact. And if I could take an action in cooperation with others, that could be more powerful. And I think Len was a great model for that.
Just that, and then it's about building real relationships with people and really understanding the systems of oppression impacting people. And I mean, I think I came with some understanding of it, but it really deepened, you know, through the work. And, you know, I remember working with the Fuentes family.
Yes.
And this boy, Jose, he had special needs, and I would go and be in seeing the way this whole system treated him in the school. I don't know how I got my foot in the door to the school, but I'm sure I was encouraged by Len to, like, get a front row seat to seeing what was actually going on. And that was, made a profound impact.
I think that's a really good point. We had much more entryway into the schools than I realized, and the contrast between what we were studying, holistic education alternative, what was going on. So the after school program that we founded was based on integrating the arts into the academic work. I remember talking to a parent in my pidgin Spanish, and she couldn't communicate with the teachers in the school. And that led me to go to Mexico and become fluent so I could come back and translate.
Yeah.
So that's how immediate the impact was. And then it brought that Spanish into my career to help in other ways later.
Yeah, I guess I just want to add, I also did a go far away and study Spanish thing. I went to Guatemala for 6 months and ended up living in a... most of that time lived in a remote village, remote Mayan village, and one of the things looking back that I think was a legacy of the Inner College was the way that I learned from the work with Len that everybody was smart, that everybody could be brilliant, that it wasn't about how educated you were, that everybody had that spark and that potential. And so when I was there, living with people who could not read or write, many of them could not speak Spanish, they spoke a Mayan language, you know, no electricity, no running water, just such a different culture. And yet to be able to see that, just to be able to see the humanity and to see the brilliance in them, I think that was very much a legacy of working with Lynn. There's something about the way that he just sees people and sees the spark of life and the spark of intelligence in them, no matter who they are or where they come from or what their status is. That was very, very profound for me, I think.
I'm so glad you brought that example up. And what was really deep for me was that he knew exactly when and if to push somebody along the log, sort of lines, and when to hold back, because he did recognize that brilliance and that gift. And so there was an unfoldment of realization of what one could do and empowerment and one's gifts because of the way he approached. And again, that impacted me with the students I worked with many years after as a teacher. So the ripples.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the whole idea that systems need to be changed, of course, it was the error. I mean, we were the early 70s, you know, that so much change is needed. But after I lived in Mexico, I went back to UConn and went into the School of Education. I decided maybe I can change from the inside. And it was so conservative. It was just mind-numbing how conservative it was to be part of it. You know, I will say, just like sitting here, the four of us women, I don't remember feminism.
Yeah,
I mean, we had each other, but thinking about it again, like drowning in sexism was also part of my experience at UConn. And maybe in some of the work, like, as you can see, there's a lot of male leaders here, and it was so good to hear Marion and now Rhonda put this together. But I think it wasn't. Timing of feminists rising,
yeah,
or whatever. But it was hard. That was a hard part about that. I didn't.
Yeah.
See myself really. As a leader, or, you know, even just, I just talked to Jeff Beadle, you know what I mean? I saw the men as our leaders in some ways.
Mm. I didn't experience that, though, in the tutorial program.
Yeah.
I know I took a leadership role. I have no idea what I
did.
Yeah, exactly,
I think I did too. But
I think you did too, but it was like leadership came as a natural evolution and growth, and then
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden we could put together things and do programs and
yeah.
create new things. So it's sort of like when my awareness of feminism came in more, I had that
yeah.
reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it certainly wasn't part of our discussion
right.
at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've thought about that in kind of a more intellectual way as well, because
yeah.
I always was a little bit of a theory head. I just like
yes.
loved ideas and social theory
yes.
and talking about all that stuff. And it was great to have a place to do it that wasn't like alienating everybody else. And so I loved the classes that I was taking, particularly with Len, and we would, you know, learn about all these social theorists, and they were all men. And I was thinking about that just lately, you know, this reunion coming up and thinking about various aspects of the work. But then later on, I went and I got a PhD where I focused on feminist theory. And it was kind of like, and I only made this connection recently, that it was like that joy I felt and what opened up in that work that I did with Len, not even knowing at that point quite yet to ask, where are the women?
Right.
But then I found the women, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I you know, kind of...
Mm. Yeah.
connected with all of that and identified mm-hmm. with it. And so even though there's like a discontinuity
uh-huh.
for me, there's like a continuity as well. It's ironic
yeah.
and it is about the times, I
yeah.
think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, definitely a, you know, male dominated atmosphere, but also sisterhood.
Yeah.
And the openings, you know, a little bit of that light coming in and the ability to develop leadership and have that experience. So I think that there are both sides
yeah.
of that when
and
thinking
the
about it. Yeah.
Of the way.
Right.
You know, questioning of the way things are.
Yeah.
Question.
Yeah. And
the inner college just had the spirit of the time, you know, the exploring and being able to have your own agency and to be able to, you know, identify. So I think in having your own agency or exploring, that was self, supportive as a woman, you know, because that's, oh, you know, I could do this or
yeah.
I could explore that or that, but it, so I can't speak of the other, but I could speak of that. Mm-hmm. And I ended up in my major was in the art department. And there was a lot of sexism in the art department at that time. So as far as how many instructors were female and what type of art was and who the artists were and like I had done some fiber pieces and oh my goodness, fiber pieces, that's not, you know, considered the art of the real artist or something. You know, it was very much, I remember I was asked to be in, to represent and be in a contest type show with the other students and I went against, I knew they wanted me to do certain things because that's where I had some very creative pieces in drawing and I did kind of three-dimensional and flat pieces and had them very exciting. And I just said, you know, I want to do the fiber piece for this. And I knew, you know, you could tell that people were, oh, I wish you didn't do that. You know, I wish you did that other thing. It's mm-hmm. so it was definitely there.
So maybe just broadly, those of you who took inter college classes, but also just the experience of being on campus, how did these experiences impact you for your future, for your careers, for your development as individuals?
I can tick off maybe at least a dozen powerful social action projects in schools or with others that I did because I came to realize that I had the power. These change things can happen. And I don't say that with any ego. I say that with thank you, inner college. Thank you, Len, for the way that you approached a very shy undergraduate. I was very shy and didn't have the sense of capacity that I could do this. Mm. And what evolved because of it. So each of us has a choice of whether we have a life of impact, right? And we have our impact in different ways, small or large. But I know the world is a better place because of those programs and because that inner college gave me a capacity and Len. How did I know how to do what I did in those projects? Well, if I go back to that tutoring program that we created with the arts and the center, with schools and the parents, well, so much was learned. So I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, I think even though maybe I struggled with the part of this, I feel like institutions can be suffocating and could, like, I could have just flunked out of UConn my first year, how mind-numbing the courses were. And so it's like I can find meaning and I can learn in this way. And I think that's what meant the most to me. You know, that I can learn from being with people. You know, that is how I learn most of what I know. I feel like I learn from building close relationships with people and seeing the systems of impacting people. And I feel like I could see it in Willamette. romantic. I mean, we worked together in Hartford too before college.
We did. In middle school and high school.
We were part of tutoring in Hartford before we came here.
That's right.
I was pulled in the direction of children and families and young people, and I've worked with them for whatever 50 years. Oh. That same population, but I felt like I found a home among a diverse group of people where I could learn from listening and hearing people's experience, and then could work towards creating systems of change that made a difference to children and families. So I feel like that's been a thread the entire time.
We talked about a lot of ideas.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the books we read and the ideas, and you were quite a writer back then, too.
I don't remember, but I could have felt really that I wasn't very intelligent if I was measuring myself by what I was learning from the standard way things were taught. You know, I mean, Brian was saying he remembered that I did well, but all I knew how to do was to spit something out, and I didn't retain any of it. But what I retained from the experiences I lived has gone very deep. So,
and shown the work that you've done for years.
And have put always bringing the social justice lens to it. So,
you know, echo some of what they have said. Let's see. I think the idea of learning in community was very important to me. And it was new to me. I always felt like the only one or one of the only ones. And, you know, it's just whatever I wanted to learn or create, I had to do it on my own. And to being part of the Inner College, it was just like, just the beauty of having a community of learners together was really wonderful. And, you know, I tried in different spaces where I was teaching later on, that was more at the college level, to try to create that sense of community. To impart that legacy to future leaders, basically. But the other thing I wanted to say is that I think when I came to the Inner College, when I came to UConn, it felt like social change was all about protest. You know, just get out there and protest what you don't like and what's wrong with the world. And what I learned from Len and from the Inner College in general is that, yeah, of course you need to do that, but it's also really about creating. About creating new spaces and new institutions and new, Len would use, I feel like I can't find it there. But just, in creating, envisioning, having a vision of what you want the world to look like. And that was, I think, very profound. Very, very profound to absorb that. And to, looking back, I can see how important that's been throughout my life and my own sense of, partly about social change and education, but also just as a creator, as a creative person, that just how important that has been to me.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing your perspective and your experience and your history.
Well, thank you for this opportunity and for making all this available to people and to future generations.
Can you introduce yourself, please?
I am Albert Darman Sosa. I've changed my name. I used to be Armando Sosa, and I joined the Inner College in 1972.
So did you take courses that were part of the Inner College?
Yes, the Inner College allowed me to have more independent study and to design my own program to go at my own pace. So that's why the Indian College was important to me. I had learned in my Cuba how to be an independent student, and the university didn't have anything like that, except Len was here and I was going to be in trouble without a real independent mode of maintaining my learning. I was trained by educators in Cuba, and they always trained me to be my own person, to learn at my own pace. And here everything was very regimented. And so thanks to, we were allowed to have more independent studies than anybody else. We also had extra funding from Xerox Corporation. Did you know that? That was one of the main sources that made the Inner College possible, thanks to grants that Len wrote to the Xerox. Without them, we would have been nowhere.
Interesting.
And so because of Len had this self-motivated, self-driven way to learn, that's what empowered me to remain at the university, because it was a crisis. My first semester was a disaster. It was too regimented, and I needed to go at my own pace. So that's what Len did. He allowed me then to become a good scholar who has been in contact with many well-known scholars and done a lot of benevolent work. So,
and how did you go about finding collaborators, teachers to teach these courses that you would take, or teach them yourselves?
Actually, one of the first things I did is the first course on homosexuality at the university, taught by Duane Denfeld in 1973, I started that course. In the liberal arts culture at the university here, had a lot of networking people that knew each other and whatever, so I was able to meet artists, painters, sculptors that helped me in my way. So also music, I met teachers at the music department that could help support an independent study, composition, for example. So it was just, there was a culture that was aware of networking, building community, and that's, so it was basically in the liberal arts and fine arts.
Did you get much pushback on trying to justify taking these kinds of courses that were fairly, you know, new, experimental?
Yes, I did, and one semester I got so many credits that the university cut like 4 or 5 credits, but all the professors said, you earned this stuff. You know, I had like 34, 35 credits in one semester. But everybody said, you did this work. But the school said, no, nobody can do that. That's too many. But I was very busy with painting, music, sculpture, creative writing, also alternative education, and radical thinking. So,
did you have much overlap with the community in Willimantic or communities outside of the university at Storrs?
Eventually, I resided in Willimantic because I was at Storrs for 10 years. I'm one of the Doonesbury characters, you know. So I eventually moved to Willimantic for many years. I lived with Len at the gray house out there.
So can you clarify that for me? So was that space, because I've heard from several different groups of students who were generally progressive left activists on campus, the UConn Free Press was printed in the basement, the Inner College would have meetings on the second floor. What, can you describe this house? Who hung out at this house? Was it Len's residence? Like, was it his office?
He was renting the house. It was a private house, but it was all housed by students. It was a little fraternity, and it was all UConn students. So some of them would be graduating and whatnot. So eventually, after the first year, I became like the head of the house. So that was until 1974. Then I moved to Willimantic. But that was a private house.
Okay. Would you say that was kind of like a place where organizing was happening?
Yes, absolutely. The students get together, talk, we play chess, and we think of ideas and things. So it was an informal but creative space where Len would come over and sleep in his room and things like that. So I had an art space there too.
Okay.
In the basement too. So
that is very helpful. I've been hearing so many little smatterings of like that place being important, but it's not on our campus technically.
You know what was we at some point it was part of the campus, okay, and then it wasn't anymore, but the garbage collectors from the campus still went over to pick up the garbage.
Okay.
So, but we let them think it was still part of the university. We got the garbage taken for free, but even after the thing broke.
That's great. Thank you, Albert, for talking
yes,
with
indeed.
Me. So can you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, my name is John Long.
And when were you involved at UConn? When were you a student?
I was in intercollege from 1970 to 1973.
And did you take classes through the intercollege?
I took a photography class that was offered by the intercollege by Jim Hall, who was a professional photographer. And then the rest of it, what I was doing was I really didn't want to fit into any major, so I was taking classes all over. So I had a radio show on WHUS for 3 years. I did the Mother Earth Blues show. And so I got credits from the communications department. I took classes in the English department, in the theater department, all over the place. So it really was because I didn't want to have a standard major. I didn't really fit in any of those, and I wanted to do one of everything. So that's what I did.
So do you feel like you got maybe more of a technical experience from these kinds of independent studies? Like the radio show, for example, you know, you have to learn the board, and you have to, like, figure out how to go on and off the air, sign on. Did that feel like something that you wouldn't have gotten in a typical class here at UConn?
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely. And the photography class and all of those things, you know, I ended up using somewhere along the line in my lifetime, because I ended up, I did theater and things, but I also ended up doing video. So the visual part of the photography came in, and the sound editing and, you know, all of those things I ended up using at some point in my career. And I actually worked in publishing in New York City. And one of the things that I did, I started out editorial, then I was in production. And in those days, everything was becoming computerized. And they didn't have people who understood publishing and understood computers. There was no computer science in those days. So the companies would train you. So I actually got trained to run large, you know, mainframe computer systems specifically for publishers, magazine publishers mostly. So I learned to program. I learned to, you know, do all these things on the fly, which was, I think intercollege was the perfect preparation for that, because I, you know, hand me a manual and I can figure out how to do it on a computer. And that's basically what I did. And so, you know, in those days it was being able to run a computer system for those guys. It was very lucrative. It was a good job. And I think a lot of that was because I had sort of figured out that I do better self-motivated rather than having class assignments. When we had a three faculty committee, and I made a commitment to the committee that I was going to do something, then I would actually get it done.
Did you end up getting much pushback from, say, like your advisor or the department that you had sort of a home, you know, degree assignment to? Was there much pushback in trying to get the class approved to take for credit?
No, most part, no. I mean, there were certain people, certain faculty members who knew about the intercollege and were interested in it and were willing to put together a program with you where you'd say, I'm going to do this and this and this for this many credits. And that's how it worked. And that's how it worked on the radio station, too. You know, if you doing a weekly show, I used to do a weekly show for the Blues show, which I would have to do a lot of research for. So I would show my research because I would talk about the various musicians and their history and all those things. And then I would do like a morning show where I'd fill in sometimes on the morning shows. But I would, you know, I would show all of the research that I did, because in those days you had to go to the library to do it. There was no online. And so it was basically a three-credit class. It was, you know, the same thing.
Do you remember using the library in other capacities, say like the alternative press newspapers, do you remember there being a presence of the archives or the special collections librarian and the work happening there to collect kind of alternative things?
That was just getting started. I mean, you know, a lot of those alternative publications and things were just coming out. So that was getting started. And so, but I also did some work where I did some research on alternative education programs around in the country at that time. So I would do that in the library. I also did some visits to Goddard and some of the ones that were more local. And I was doing that research working with a professor who was doing a book about alternative education, so I was kind of a research assistant, but I was doing it for credit, not for pay. And so that was, you know, most of the work that I was doing was that kind of thing. And then the rest was, you know, just doing stuff, you know, working on programs, working on committees. Because, you know, one of the things I think is important about Inner College is that it was a, you know, we had to direct, we had to run the program too. And we were doing it by consensus. And, you know, and like I say, in later life, I ended up hooking up with, you know, the Quakers who basically do things by consensus. It's exactly the same situation. So, and it's interesting because the last 10 years of my career, I actually worked for Community Foundation as a program officer. And one of my responsibilities was to help strengthen the organization of nonprofits, the organizational development of nonprofits. And, you know, I had worked in Inner College, which had no hierarchy and was consensus. I had worked for small family companies. I'd worked for international corporations. I'd seen all of those things. So it was really interesting to end up where I never thought I would, dealing with organizational development. That was a complete surprise to me that that's where I ended up being. But I realized all that background really worked for that, so I could understand it.
Cool. Thanks for your time, John.
Thanks.
I'm your host, Graham Stinnett. You've been listening to another episode of Darshiv on 91.7 WHUS Stores. For more information on the Archives and Special Collections, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and the web. Our theme song is Dream in Cassio Tone by Arable Lands. Graphic design by Melika Stinnett. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.